You're listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.
Hello, this is Brock, and this is the Sprocket Podcast. Special edition. Today we're talking with David Griffiths. We spoke to him about 2 months ago about his impending trip to Colombia for the World Bike Forum. And now that he's back, we had him in to share some observations. I am, of course, standing in my backyard. I can hear some construction equipment down the street, some chickens, a lot of birds. This is the land of crows, but this morning they seem to have flocked elsewhere. So, anyways, enjoy this conversation with David Griffiths.
Thank you again for bringing the drinks.
Sure.
This is 1 week where we are not sponsored. Well, we're still sponsored by the Beer Mongers. We also got a drink sponsor since the last time I saw you. So.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So I should have probably, well, I'm very happy that you brought the beverages. Thank you so much. And yet, we generally don't allow people to bring beverages in because we'd like to, to treat you. So we're making a special exception for you.
I'm honored.
Well, let's see. So we spoke to you right before you left. That was in February?
Yeah, I think so.
And you went to the World Bicycling Forum.
In Medellin, Colombia.
Right, yeah. And I think at the time that we recorded, you were unsure as to whether you were going to be able to afford a hotel or not, but you got the funds raised.
Yeah, and I did actually get into a hotel, and it was actually kind of amusing because I ended up in two different hotels.
You told me some of this story when I met you at VeloCult. It was an ordeal, right?
Well, it was kind of an ordeal, but it was also an educational experience.
Okay,
and I'm really glad that it worked out the way that it did. In spite of all the problems and hassles and all the, you know, bullshit and nonsense.
Right.
I'm still glad that I had the experience because it allowed me to see, like I told you, I think, you know, it allowed me to see two different faces of the city. And it also showed me some interesting things about the contrasts between, you know, these different parts of the city of Medellin, the differences in cycling infrastructure,
mm-hmm.
and different approaches to transportation and mobility in the different parts of the city.
Right. So you started out in, would it be considered a less desirable part of town? By some.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I started out in a cheaper hotel that I had found for myself online, in a poorer part of town, nearer the, I guess, what we would consider downtown,
mm-hmm.
But sort of near the industrial area.
Okay.
You know, I got there a few days before the thing actually started, so
uh-huh.
I had some time to ride around, explore the city a little bit, and get familiar with my route from the hotel to the convention center where the forum was held. And I found a really nice way to get there.
I remember you telling me about that. It was a cycleway that was car free. Is that right?
Yeah. It was partly on pedestrian streets, which is something that I hadn't really seen before.
That was shocking to me. I have not heard of a pedestrian street until now.
Yeah. It was amazing. It was a street. It was like a regular street with shops and things down both sides, but there were no sidewalks.
So how did the people going to the shops get to those shops without cars? That's my question. Is it possible?
Walking.
There we go. It's a novel concept, right?
Yeah. You know, I've heard that people used to do that a lot more.
Savages all.
Yeah. But it's brilliant. It's amazing. It's a completely car-free street.
And you could bicycle on this street. Or you could hand cycle, at least.
I could.
Okay.
Technically, I think you might... I think maybe you're not supposed to ride bicycles on the pedestrian streets.
Okay.
I don't think I saw any.
Okay.
Actually.
Yeah.
But I never had any problems with anybody. Nobody ever tried to, you know, stop me or tell me you're not supposed to be here.
Right.
I didn't even get any dirty looks. Well, it's not too many.
That's good.
From any of the many, 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 many police officers who were all over the streets.
It's pretty well patrolled then, huh?
Yeah. But I found out from someone I met who lives there that apparently, like, every young man in the city is required, and I think this might be nationwide, I think every young man in the country is required to do some service with the military or the police.
Interesting. It's kind of like Israel, because they have a similar requirement for their residents, right? So it's just the idea that, hey, you do some public service, and a lot of people would be policemen then.
Yeah.
Or police women. Peace officers, I guess.
Yeah, and apparently a lot more people choose the police than the military.
That's interesting. I wonder if the barriers to police work in Colombia are lower, because it would seem like maybe the barriers are higher here, and it's probably good because, you know, you don't want the wrong people doing police work. But at the same time, if everyone has to do it, then I wonder if that makes it a less stressful job. Maybe it's just looked at differently.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I wish I had more time, and I wish I knew more Spanish and I'd been able to, you know, talk to more people about that. It would have been interesting to find out.
Yeah. Well, no worries. We're not talking about police work primarily anyways, so.
No. But anyway, the point is, I was able to ride on these pedestrian streets, and then one of the older style bike lanes, or bike paths rather, that took me most of the way to the convention center. And, you know, I was pleased that I figured this out for myself.
Right, right.
And I enjoyed the ride. It was fun being, you know, around people and getting to see, you know, this vibrant community.
Get your cultural immersion that way.
Yeah. But a couple of days just before the forum began, I met with a couple of the organizers, a couple of people from the program committee, to talk about my presentations. And they met me at my hotel. And when they saw what I had to go through to get my cycle out of my hotel room, down the hall, into the elevator, out of the elevator, down the hall, and out the front door of the hotel, they were horrified.
I said, this will not stand.
And I think they were also a little bit horrified by the fact that I was staying in such a cheap hotel in such a sleazy neighborhood.
Right. It kind of put off just by the entire situation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which I, of course, had no problem with.
You were cool with it.
Yeah. I felt totally comfortable.
We should specify that you had to remove your wheels, correct, to get up and down in this hotel that you were in?
Yes. I had to take the wheels off to get it in the elevator, put them back on to get it down the hallway to my room, then take the wheels off again.
Oh, and the room door was not big enough.
To get it into the hotel room.
Okay.
But, you know, I figured this is what you have to do.
Sure.
And it You know, I'm used to things being difficult, and I don't expect everything to be perfect.
Yeah, you're not afraid of a little work.
Yeah. And on top of it, the guys working at the front desk were really friendly and helpful, and they, you know, we developed a routine.
Yeah.
Where I would, you know, come down from my room in the morning, and they'd help me get my cycle out of the elevator and down the hallway and out the front door. And when I came back in the evening, it was the reverse. You know, they'd take the wheels off, pick it up, take it down the hall of the elevator, and it was all good.
Yeah.
And a lot of other people in the hotel, other guests, and just people who happened to be there, would give me a hand when
right.
they saw that I needed it.
Yeah.
And nobody seemed to begrudge me anything, and nobody seemed to feel offended or put out by my presence or their needing to help me. Nobody tried to make me feel guilty about them having to help me.
Mm-hmm.
It's just, this is what we do for each other.
Right.
But like I said, when I met with these people from the program committee, by the way, one of them was from the U.S. and the other was from Austria.
Okay.
And the Austrian fellow, he also, his girlfriend came along, and she was from Iran. So an interesting mix of cultural backgrounds,
yeah.
each with their own different perspectives on these kinds of things.
Several ambassadors showing up to critique the place you were staying.
Yeah. And they all decided that I needed to be moved to a different hotel.
Mm-hmm. They decided for you?
Yeah.
Okay.
More or less. And they met with the general coordinator of the World Bike Forum. The closest thing there was to the guy in charge. And the guy in charge, Mr. General Coordinator, personally arranged for me to be moved to another hotel, a much, much more expensive hotel, which they paid for.
Well, that's nice.
So that was kind of a plus.
Yeah. Nice of them to take care of you.
Yeah. But it was a much more expensive hotel in a much more tourist-friendly neighborhood.
So you're not getting the genuine cultural immersion then necessarily.
Right.
Right out the front door.
Right. And ironically, even though there was a ramp up to the front door, it was, one of the steepest ramps I've ever seen in my life.
Okay.
And it was just wide enough for me to get up there. But I had to have somebody open the door for me.
Yeah. Take a running start at it.
Yeah. And there was still, the need for other people to be involved.
Right.
For me to just get in the door of the damn hotel.
Uh-huh. And do I remember correctly, you still had to remove the wheels in the more expensive hotel also?
No.
Oh, okay.
No.
The doors were wider.
Yeah, the door was a little bit wider.
Okay.
And I didn't take my cycle up to my room in this hotel.
Okay.
They stored it for me in the conference room.
Oh.
And so,
private garage.
More or less. So when I came out in the morning, they would go into the conference room and bring it out to me. It was nice if that's the kind of thing that you're used to and comfortable with.
You're being so diplomatic with this.
if you're okay with people behaving like servants.
Yeah.
I'm sure some people probably would have appreciated that a lot.
I just
felt really, really guilty.
Uh-huh.
And really, really, I don't know if I should even say this, but I felt like such an American. It was, ugh.
Well, yeah, I'm sure you and I probably both have had, like, the idea of how you want to carry yourself as a traveling American. Like, you don't want to fulfill any stereotypes. You don't want to, make the rest of us look bad, even if we do tend to look bad sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. And kind of like some of those choices just being made for you.
That was the main thing.
Yeah.
Was the choices being made for me. And that's an important point. I'm glad you brought that up, and we will come back to that.
All right. Put a pin in that then.
Yeah. But the other interesting difference between the two hotels was in the route to the convention center.
Oh, right.
From the second hotel, I was able to use what they call a cicloruta, or bicycle route. And these are separated bike lanes, or as they're sometimes called in this country, segregated bike lanes.
It's a controversial title.
Yeah. That just didn't feel right.
Yeah.
To me.
Right.
You know, maybe I'm crazy. Maybe there's a lot about this cycling infrastructure stuff that I just don't understand yet. And maybe people are hoping that I'll come around and get it. But one of the things that I've always enjoyed about bike paths is the fact that they feel more, and I don't even really know how to talk about this intelligently, but
that's okay.
The best I can do is to say that they feel more human.
Uh-huh.
They feel like roads for people.
Like all kinds of people can use this.
Yeah. And there's also a feeling of, you know, it's like this is not just traveling through space, not just going from point A to point B. This is like going back in time.
Uh-huh.
You know, it feels like an older kind of road. It feels like...
Are you talking about the cycle paths or the...
I'm talking about bike paths that I'm used to here.
Okay.
Here in Cascadia.
Gotcha.
You know, where I learned to ride. You know, these feel to me like roads from an earlier time.
Right.
Roads almost from a time before cars, even though they do have the modern asphalt paving, and we can overlook that.
Right.
But the point is, that was what got me about bike paths and about cycling and about all of it, and that was what allowed me to develop that philosophy of ciclovismo that I was talking about the last time I was here.
Yeah.
It was just everything came together on those bike paths. And there was some of that in the route that I took from the first hotel to the convention center.
Along the pedestrian roads.
Yeah, on the pedestrian streets and the older style bike paths, that felt a little more like what I was used to.
Okay.
But the ciclorutas,
the one that went right past your new hotel.
Yeah, that went right past the hotel and took me all the way to the convention center. From my perhaps non-standard perspective, it really kind of sucked.
Uh-huh.
Because it just felt like this is just a different kind of modern road. This is just a road for bikes rather than cars, but it's still not a road for people.
Right. Well, and as I recall, your experience was that it seemed like it was designed or developed for a certain kind of bicyclist that's going to be traveling at a certain speed.
Yeah. And it was clear to me that these routes are intended for commuters.
Right.
These are primarily for commuters.
Like 15 mile an hour upright commuters?
Yeah.
Something like that?
Yeah. These are not paths that people can comfortably ride slowly.
Right.
And it's not really a place for people to ride for a little while and then pull off the side and hang out.
No benches built in nearby?
There were a couple of, you know, benches in a couple of spots.
Okay.
But overall, the thing was obviously more intended to facilitate people on bikes getting quickly from one place to another.
Yeah. Would it be fair to say that impatience was also built into that model? Like, do you think...
Yes.
Like, when you were there, I'm sure you felt the pressure of people behind you that expected they'd be going faster.
Generally, people would just go around me.
Okay. So it was possible for them to pass you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The traffic on the Ciclorota was never heavy enough that, you know, in both directions, that people just couldn't go around me.
Sure. Okay.
And that was the other thing. They were not very busy.
Uh-huh.
It's like, here's a road that's designed for people on bikes to go really fast from point A to point B. But most of the time that I was on those paths, there weren't very many people riding on them.
Oh, that's interesting.
And I saw almost as many pedestrians using the ciclorutas.
Okay.
As I saw people on bikes.
Gotcha. Were there sidewalks nearby that the pedestrians were probably expected to be on, or?
In some places.
Depending on the part that you were on, I suppose.
Yeah. But the thing that really surprised me and really kind of let me down was because the Ciclorruta, this was through a part of Medellin that had been sanitized for tourists. Mm-hmm. It just didn't feel like a neighborhood in a Colombian city.
Yeah, again, not the cultural immersion that you were hoping for.
Right. I remember pretty much every time that I rode from the hotel to the convention center, along that route, I was just thinking, you know, this doesn't really look like Colombia.
Right, right.
This could be almost any city in the world. And I'm sure that the people who designed these bike paths would probably be pleased.
Sure.
To hear that.
Yeah.
That this looks like any other city in the world.
It's kind of what they're going for, you think?
But that's not what I want to see.
Yeah.
When I travel to another continent and you know, I'm in an entirely different part of the world with a very different culture, you know, I don't want to go all that way to go and see more of the same.
Right, right. Did you find new routes once you had moved to the new hotel? Did you find other places that approximated what you were looking for?
No.
Okay.
No, I stuck with the route that I knew. The funny thing is I did end up going back to the other part of town.
To kind of hang out and just see things, people. Yeah.
Yeah. Because the other hotel was the first hotel was actually closer to a place called the Cafe Teatro.
Okay.
Which was at the Teatro, oh, what is that guy's name? It was named for a guy, Pablo Uribe, okay. I think. Teatro, Pablo, something like that. Anyway, there was a cafe in this theater, and that was where the organizers, the people from the program committee, would get together and do their thing in the days before the forum actually began.
Okay.
And there were some other events that happened there during the week. And so that just seemed like, you know, a comfortable place to go back to.
Totally.
Even after I'd moved to the other hotel.
You end up commuting back to the place that you started.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, yeah. More miles, more experience.
Yeah. And what was most interesting to me was the day that I actually got to ride in a ciclovia.
Oh, yeah. It's something you were looking forward to.
Yeah, because I met up with a couple of friends from Portland to do the ciclovia.
Yeah, and this is the ciclovia where they shut down the streets and there are no motor vehicles. It's just people on human-powered vehicles.
Yeah. And that morning I went from my new hotel along the Ciclorruta down to near the convention center. I didn't actually go to it, but I went right alongside it. And from the convention center, I went back up the bike lane or bike path and pedestrian streets back up to where my previous hotel was, and then on sidewalks and streets over to where the teatro, the cafe was. And that allowed me, you know, in one trip to see the modern separated bike paths, the older style bike paths, and pedestrian streets, and sidewalks, and ride in the street with cars.
So it's like you got everything. It was like the buffet of modes that day.
Yeah.
Nice.
And then after doing that little tour of all the different ways of moving around, then I went to ride in the ciclovia.
There we go.
And that also turned out to be kind of disappointing.
You know, oh, yeah?
It was not really what I expected. But to be fair, I think the main reason for my disappointment with that was because I wasn't actually on the main part of the ciclovia.
Oh, okay.
Apparently in Medellin, it's not all connected.
So it's not one big loop. It's like a couple of different planetary spheres or something.
And the main part of the ciclovia, where there's a lot more of the activities and things going on and more of the cultural stuff, you know, like the kinds of things that we see going on in the parks during Sunday Parkways.
Right, which is kind of like Portland ciclovia.
Yeah.
Kind of.
That all happens along the river.
Okay. Did you know that at the time, or did you find out later?
I didn't. I found that out later.
Okay, gotcha. So you're there, and you're like, oh, this ciclovia is kind of lame, and then you're like, oh, the real one, or the big one, is somewhere else.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can see that being disappointing.
And the other thing is, it felt to me like the ciclovia, the part of it that I got to ride in, didn't really have any of that neighborhood cultural kind of stuff.
Okay.
It was, we're going to close off one lane of a major road.
So like Portland Sunday Parkways then.
and we're going to allow bikes to ride in the road in this one lane for a few hours on this one day.
Yeah.
And it, again, it felt like the focus was on using bikes instead of cars, but still doing the same thing.
Okay, as opposed to a greater revolution in the streets.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Interesting.
The other really eye-opening experience that I had was getting to ride in a critical mass.
Oh, yeah.
And apparently they do these fairly regularly in Medellin. Even though there is a lot of good, or at least what some people consider good cycling infrastructure, they still do regular critical mass rides.
Just to kind of keep the idea in people's minds that bicycles are for transport and roads are for people?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they also have more ciclovias during the week. It's not just on Sundays. Mm. The main one is on Sunday, but they also have them, if I remember correctly, on Tuesday and Thursday evenings. And I would have liked to have participated in one of those, but the timing just didn't work out. But I did get to ride in this critical mass ride.
Okay, yeah.
Which was, you know, considered part of the World Bike Forum. And so I got to ride through the streets of Medellin at night and late into the night with hundreds of people from all over the world.
That's pretty cool.
And it was just brilliant.
Yeah. That's the experience that you were looking forward to, I'm sure.
Yeah. And it really kind of makes me sad that the best experience I had while I was there for the World Bike Forum wasn't actually part of the forum.
Sure. Yeah.
I mean, it was timed so that it would happen during the forum, but it wasn't really part of the formal,
the actual event. Like it wasn't on any agenda or anything like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. But it was a lovely add-on. And a great great example of what can happen when people get together to take back the streets, I assume.
Yeah, yeah. It was amazing. We actually had police support.
Mm.
It's the first time I've ever seen cops supporting a critical mass ride.
Interesting.
So that was kind of cool.
Yeah.
And then also, I was really surprised by the kinds of reactions that we got from people in cars who were stopped at intersections along the way.
Well, how did they react?
The only times I remember actually hearing people in cars honking their horns, they were honking in time with our chanting.
Oh,
as
nice.
We rode by.
Kind of it was solidarity from the people who were waiting for the bicycles to pass.
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Yeah. And a friend who I made while I was there, somebody I was introduced to who lived nearby, was kind of explaining some things to me as we went along through the critical mass ride. She said that a lot of people in Medellin are really supportive of cycling as transportation.
Yeah.
even though they don't do it themselves.
Interesting. So not and like not like the Netherlands where everyone is supportive of cycling because everyone is a cyclist. Here, it's people are supportive of cycling even though they're not.
Yeah.
That's fascinating.
Yeah, and apparently a lot of people seem to be envious of cyclists. They wish that they could do more of that.
I like to think that's what's going through people's minds when it happens here in Portland, too.
Yeah. But I still don't really understand what stops them from doing it.
Right, right.
Except for just the...
assumptions?
Does that assumptions seem? And the programming.
Sure.
Social and cultural programming.
Right. Like bicycling is not the norm for most people in North America. And so
yeah.
to think about like, oh, what if I did that? It would be a big step. It'd be a leap. And you'd have to commit to a thing. You'd have to wear special clothes and you'd have to, I mean, those are all the assumptions, all the reasons that, that I wish, cycling was more widespread because it would kind of bust some of those myths.
Yeah. So this is kind of coming around to what I want to do next.
Right. Yeah, because you were sharing some ideas with me.
We desperately need to change our thinking in this society, our thinking about transportation, because that, as I see it, is the key to changing our thinking about so many other things. And I personally believe that making the switch, the transition from petroleum power to human power transportation is probably the single most important change that is most readily available to most individuals. I'm not so arrogant as to say that everybody can do this, so everybody should right now. I understand it isn't going to work for everyone. But I like to think that the fact that I do it proves that it is more accessible, a more realistic option for more people than many of us realize.
Sure. Yeah, like if you, I mean, you primarily get around using your hands to pedal a cycle, and you go a lot of places. And last time you were here, you told me you occasionally climb the West Hills with your hands. So if you can do it, a lot of people can do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But I really think that this is the key. There are so many problems now, so many things going wrong. And I hear a lot of people and I read a lot of things online, people talking about, you know, we need to make these changes. We need to deal with these issues. We need to deal with these problems.
Cure society's ills.
And exactly. And it's everything ranging from social problems to environmental problems. And it's getting harder and harder for me to see any separation between them.
Like all the problems, all the social ills, or all the ills just in general.
Yeah.
They all kind of bleed together?
Exactly. They're all interconnected. And while I think a lot of people, if they begin to see that, if they begin to see the relationships between all of these supposedly separate issues, they probably see it as kind of overwhelming.
Sure.
And they think, oh, this is just too big. We can't possibly do anything about this. I choose to look at it the other way. And I see the interconnectedness between all these different issues as the thing that gives me hope, the thing that tells me, oh, maybe we can actually do something about all of this.
Sure.
We just have to be smart about how we approach it.
Yeah.
And like I said, I think that getting out of your car, getting into the street, is the single most important thing that most individuals, that most average citizens can most readily do.
Sure.
That will have the greatest impact.
Because you're gonna be closer to people, closer to other people in your world.
That's a part of it. Another part of it is I have found for myself that using human-powered transportation not only allows me to make better choices about how I interact with my community, with the world around me, it allows me to make better choices about how I move through the world, and it allows me to take more responsibility, not only for my transportation, but what I use transportation to achieve.
Uh-huh.
It allows me to take a greater degree of personal responsibility for my choices and my actions. It allows me to withdraw my participation from sectors of the economy and our society that I don't want to support.
Uh-huh. Like if there's conflict and pain being caused by a war that's ostensibly about the acquisition of oil, you can step back from that by not using it.
Yeah.
As much. I mean,
I that's probably one of the best examples.
Well, I mean, all things are interconnected. So obviously, like brake pads for my bike show up on a truck. I can't get away from that. But
yeah.
I use far less oil when I'm using those brake pads that I bought for my bike than I am using bigger brake pads in a vehicle that also burns oil. So,
right.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, something else that comes from petroleum that a lot of people don't think about.
Polyester?
Pharmaceuticals.
Oh, pharmaceuticals. Okay, yeah.
You know, the major, as I understand it, the majority of pharmaceutical products are derived from petroleum and petroleum byproducts.
Interesting.
And so, you know, in addition to choosing to use a cycle rather than a car, you know, I also have gotten pharmaceuticals out of my life, and I use cannabis.
You start working into alternative medicine
to deal with, you know, my chronic pain, my epilepsy, my mental health issues that I deal with, and I don't know. Maybe I'm crazy. Well, I just said I'm crazy. But
but aren't we all?
I love the fact that all of the things I do to make myself a happier, healthier human being are the same things that I can do to stick it to the petroleum industry.
And thusly the man?
Yep.
Yeah, the figurative man.
A neat bit of synchronicity there in my life, and I really enjoy that.
Totally. Yeah. Well, and that's a good couple of examples. I mean, the byproduct of a life well lived seems to be fun. Like, you enjoy what's happening in your life more or less when it's more in harmony with the things going on around you, and when we take care of ourselves and we take care of the people around us, enjoyment and good feelings come out of that. So that seems like a win to me. It's interesting that we're talking about this right now because on Monday we talked to Brandon Rhodes and Michael Teta from the Community Cycling Center and Scott from Vocal Form about his project of sustainable organic local produce delivered by bicycle. And they're in the middle of an expansion project for that. But what just happened was we had a conversation about how, you know, the bicycle is one of the primary ways to re-inject equity back into neighborhoods, back into people's lives.
Yes.
This business can be run using a bicycle. It brings down the overhead, brings up the accessibility. And the model that they're working under is it's a way that that people can have a job that pays pretty well but doesn't take 40 hours out of their week. So there's more time to enjoy all the other things that life has to offer. So, yeah, I like that we're having both of these conversations in the same week.
And the work itself, there's more community involvement. It's happening on a more human level.
Yeah.
And I think that's very important and highly overlooked and underrated in our modern American society.
Totally. This is super cheesy, but indulge me. We coined Boat Month for April with our first interview of April, I believe. And, could I say that hope floats and so this fits into Boat Month?
Yes.
Yeah, you can say it's dumb if it is.
It's okay.
Okay.
I'll let you have that one.
All right. We're talking about boats again next week, I think. No, it's 2 weeks out. Anyways, So, Boat Month. But yes, so you're planning on taking this message and sharing it with some people.
Yes.
And making some connections.
So if April is boat month, do you know what May is going to be?
I've got nothing clever, so tell me.
Okay. May 1st, I am hoping to kick off a campaign. This is a campaign to mobilize Cascadia.
All right.
What I will be doing, excuse me, is traveling around the bioregion, meeting with people. I want to find out primarily about people's experience of inequity in transportation and find out where there are the greatest unmet needs.
Kind of an inventory or taking of inventory?
Yeah. Or I guess you could call it a needs assessment.
Okay.
Or something like that.
Yeah.
I want to find out where the unmet needs are because I think that the change in our thinking that needs to happen, we need to focus on these unmet needs. Too much of our thinking about transportation is focused on the convenience of people who already take for granted that their needs will be met.
Mm-hmm.
They just want their needs to be met more conveniently.
Sure.
And if I've learned anything from my trip to Colombia, from my experience as a cyclist, my experience as a disabled cyclist, if I've learned anything from all of this, it's that transportation is really an extension of mobility.
Mm-hmm.
We have to look at both together.
Okay.
And I think I might have gone into this a little bit last time I was here, but it seems like there's this idea in American society, and this idea guides a lot of the infrastructure development, and that is that transportation and mobility are two separate functions that need to be dealt with separately.
They don't really overlap.
Not very well. And the only, and once again, maybe there's just something important that I'm missing here, but it seems to me that the only reason for separating those functions is so that you can develop two separate industries
right
around these two separate functions and allow for a greater degree of corporate control over these functions.
Sure.
And we need to get away from that. Mm-hmm. We need to increase, and again, this goes back to why I think human-powered transportation is the key to social change.
Uh-huh.
We need to allow and encourage more people to take more responsibility for meeting their own needs.
And empowering people to do so?
And empowering people to do so. We need to make it easier for people to meet their own needs in the area of transportation.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think that's the easiest place to flip the switch,
sure,
as it were.
Yeah.
That's the best place to start. But if my own experience has taught me anything, it's that taking responsibility for your own transportation opens your mind to the real possibility of taking control of even more.
Sure. And then,
and taking responsibility for learning more things, doing more things, doing more for yourself. And we need, I think more people need to feel that their knowledge and experience has some value.
Sure.
And has some value to their community.
Yeah. Because we live in a top-down world, but this is a from-the-bottom-up approach, saying that everyone has something to contribute.
Yeah, and going back to Ivan Illich, I want to encourage people to look at the use value of cycles as what Illich called convivial tools.
Oh, yes.
Rather than focusing on the market value of cycles as commodities.
Yeah, what's the social value of this product? Like, what does this allow us to do?
Yeah.
And how can we improve society doing that?
Yeah. And once again, I think that transportation is the best place to begin. And once people reopen their minds to the idea of focusing on use value rather than market value, and looking at things as convivial tools rather than as commodities, that'll make it easier for people to apply the same thinking to other areas of their lives.
What was the Steve Jobs quote? Was that a computer is like a bicycle for the mind? But maybe a bicycle is a computer for society. I don't know if that holds up or not.
Ooh.
But if the computer can do what a bicycle does for the body, for the mind, then maybe a bicycle can do with the mind what a computer, it's all breaking down. But
I think
it goes both ways.
I think I see where you're going with that. And I think I like it.
Yeah. But you're saying society needs some re-engineering, and some of that engineering has already started.
Yeah. But more importantly, that engineering needs to happen at the individual level.
Right, right. The empowerment of individuals to bring what they have of value to share with everybody else.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so that's kind of the basis for the model that I want to share with people in communities around Cascadia. And the other thing that I'm going to be doing this summer while I'm doing this traveling and finding out about unmet needs, I'm also going to be looking for volunteers for the Cascadian Ministry of Transportation and Mobility.
The Cascadian Ministry of Transportation and Mobility.
Yes. This is an entity which I think needs to exist.
Right.
And I think it needs to be built from the ground up. And more importantly, it needs to be built by people other than me.
All right.
I'd like to be a part of it.
Right.
But
you've got the ideas. You've got some structural things and germs of possibility. But you don't want to be the guy that does it all.
I don't want to be in charge of it. I don't think anyone should be in charge of it. I think what I would like to see happen, what I would like to be able to do, is bring my ideas to people in different communities around the bioregion of Cascadia and allow this to develop organically.
Mm-hmm.
Allow people in different communities to organize in their own communities, addressing their own needs in those communities, but be able to network with people in other communities.
Right.
For sharing of resources and sharing of ideas. And basically, what I want to see happen is community-level organizing with bioregional coordination.
Sure.
If that makes sense.
I think. So you're saying this is something that can happen all over, but it doesn't have to be ordained from on high. It can be like we've been talking about. It can start from the ground up.
Yes.
It can start with individuals coming together.
Yes.
Yeah. Quick question that makes me think of, there are governmental entities that do ostensibly some of this already. Do you anticipate that this might replace them someday? Do you anticipate that they could work in tandem? How does this interface with the systems that are already existing?
Well, that'll be interesting to find out. the position, my particular position within the ministry, within the Cascadian Ministry of Transportation and Mobility, is chief liaison officer.
Okay.
So I will hopefully be interacting with people in these agencies that you're talking about.
Gotcha. You're a bridge builder.
Yeah. That's what I want to do. I want to let them know what we're trying to do and see how they think they might be able to work with us.
Yeah. Well, it's an interesting project, and it'll be a fascinating journey.
Yeah.
Because what you're doing is basically going to get people's stories and empowering them to tell new ones.
Wow. Yeah.
I think I stole that from somebody.
Well, I'm glad you did, because you just summarized my plan much more eloquently than I think I could have done.
Well, someone I respect in radio said, if you've stolen it from me, you've stolen it twice. So that's and perhaps three or four times.
Yeah.
Anyway, well, we wish you the best as this goes on. Hope you'll send us some missives from the field. Maybe come back and report later on.
Yeah, that's my plan. I want to go out and collect stories and share them. I'm thinking about setting up a Facebook page.
Oh, there we go.
For the ministry.
Excellent. I was going to ask if there's any way people can follow you, but it's forthcoming, I suppose.
Yeah, I'm still putting it all together because at this point it's still just me.
Easy enough. Well, keep the ears peeled, everybody.
But hopefully it will soon be more than just me.
Excellent. Maybe there'll be a podcast in the works.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for coming and sharing the story. Welcome back from Colombia. Welcome back to America.
Thanks.
Such as it is. And welcome back to Portland.
Thanks.
Thanks again for listening to the Sprocket Podcast. This was a great chat with David Griffiths. We will be back with more from him when he begins his tour. So stay posted. We are, of course, brought to you by our sponsor, The Beer Mongers. Fabulous place for beer and good times in Portland, Oregon, out in the Southeast neighborhood. Also by our generous donors. Thank you so much for allowing this to happen. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send us email at thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. And we will be back next week with more. It's Boat Month.
Listening to Open Roads Broadcasting.